Good evening and welcome to the Crystal Maze, which is the Libera podcast. This week we are unfortunately without our Richard O'Brien, who Rich is on his deathbed. So I'll be playing Mumsy this week. You'll be hearing from Chris Belmore, who is currently locked in the Aztec zone. How are we doing, Chris?
Stop the fans, please!
And clutching at straws or pretend notes this week will be Andrew Lane, who is in the Crystal Dome as we speak. How are we, Lane?
Just trying to separate gold from silver. It was really difficult to see under those lights what was gold and silver, but I guess that was kind of part of the game, wasn't it?
I've had a great time, though.
Yeah, lovely day. I'm not sure anyone wins, apart from Richard O'Brien.
TV wins.
TV, yeah, we're all winners. How are we this week, gents? Interesting week of football, I think. Interesting weekend of football. I think we're going to stay away from the fun and games, which is international football, and concentrate on where the fun really is, which is the Premier League.
Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think teams look tired this weekend, and I think you saw a few withdrawals from the international break. I think a few teams looked a bit knackered this weekend. A few games in, so it's been a bit of a hectic start, and I think.
I can't believe we're 8 games into the season already. It's depressing. We're almost a fifth of the way through the season.
This is good.
It's not, because after a terrible start, I'm back on top of the Fantasy Football League where I belong.
Are you really?
Yes.
Fuck, I must have really fallen off here.
Pow!
Right, anyway, this is beige. Let's jump into a little bit of a different start. Let's go to Watford versus Bournemouth.
Yes, I said this would be an absolutely wicked game, or at least one that I was looking forward to, because you just never know what you're going to get with Watford, what team's going to turn up. This time they had like 4 teams turn up in the course of a single game, but it was a hell of a match.
Watford just seemed to have, after a bit of a shaky start, they seemed to have hit a little bit of form. They seemed to have got Deeney and Ighalo and this guy with the greatest name in the world, Isaac Success. They seemed to be kind of clicking a little bit more. I think
Deeney was an absolute weapon in this game. He's a monster. He doesn't like run around as much as he would have done when he was a bit younger, but for a man in the box who absolutely dominates it or can hold up play and link it up, he was absolute beast today. Well, not today, but
today.
It's interesting where he's playing, actually. He's definitely they've moved Ighalo to the right of a 4-3-3, haven't they? Which is interesting, because Deeney played a little bit deeper last season. Ighalo plays now out wide, sort of giving him the legs, and you always kind of felt that Deeney would be better when he just, as you say, gets to dominate the box. So it's an interesting switch by him, and it seems like Deeney's kind of learnt the role, and I think he's going to get more goals off the back of it.
This is a really good game in terms of both teams are just going all out for the win. I mean, the lead, I can't remember who was never in the lead. Was it Watford were never in the lead?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both absolutely going at each other. No, there was never really a point in the game where someone looked, you know, content with what they got or started to try and close the game out. They were both fighting right up until the end. You don't really get that many games where it's two teams quite even, absolutely, you know, hammering each other. There was a period we went through a few seasons ago when whenever the big boys played each other, it would end up being like 5-4 or 5-3 or something. That seems to have died off, and this was a bit of a, yeah, kind of...
That's when Arsenal got beat 8-2 at Old Trafford, wasn't it, Fritz?
Don't know, I blacked those years out, mate.
Seems fair.
Tell you what I've really enjoyed is seeing...
Roy Wilshire had... go on, sorry.
That's right, you just cut in, mate, it's fine. That's right, I'm only hosting. Tell you what I have been really enjoying seeing is Callum Wilson coming back and scoring some goals. He had such a shocking season last year, missing out to the entirety of the Premier, well, almost the entirety of a promotion season from injury. And I think this is either his third or fourth goal, or maybe, you know, third or fourth goal this season now, which is really, really good to see him scoring again. So I think I actually rate him pretty highly.
He's only about 24, isn't he? He's got, you know, he's got plenty of time to grow into the player that he may well become. I mean, I don't know, I've got visions of, like I would have said Villa, but not Villa, maybe Newcastle coming back up in a couple of seasons and rebuilding. And he's like, I can see him ending up somewhere, not one of the absolute top clubs. I don't know if he's got that kind of quality, you know, trying to think of like an Aguero or an Ibrahimovic. I don't think he's quite there, but definitely probably for someone who's got aspirations to push in Europe, he could be leading their line pretty comfortably in the next few years. Maybe it'll even be Bournemouth.
I don't know, actually. There was massive talk that he was when Liverpool weren't quite sure whether they thought Daniel Sturridge was any good. So there was like a mental phase. There was big talk that he was going to be one of those sort of money ball type signings they tried to bring in to replace him. So I think, you know, big teams are looking at him. Well, and Liverpool.
Yeah, I think if a big team went, it would be like for me a little bit like when Darren Bent went to Spurs. Like, obviously a goal scorer, but not quite up to the calibre. I mean, he had an excellent career, obviously at Derby at the moment. So, still having an excellent career, but not absolute top quality, but probably going to be a pretty reliable goal scorer for many, many years to come.
How do we think Wilshere's move has gone? He's kind of a few games in now. I think he kind of started the first couple off the bench. I think he started this one, and from what I saw, again, admittedly, I didn't see the entirety of the game, but a lot of the write-ups I saw said he was one of the best players on the pitch, especially for Bournemouth.
I thought he was really, good. Yeah.
He hit the post twice, didn't he?
He hit the post. He did miss a sitter right at the end, but if I'm honest, I think just seeing him in those positions and the way he was carrying the ball, the way he was covering the ground, he looked fitter than he did at Arsenal. It looks like the run of games is doing him good. You know, it is just about him staying fit for a period of 5 to 6 games. And I think then you can really judge him. But the signs were really, really good in terms of, yeah, say the way he covered the ground, the way he was. He's always been a ball carrier. Like, he doesn't want to play the quick pass and then follow it. He wants to carry the ball from, you know, mid centre circle to the edge of the penalty area. He wants to do that. And I think he struggled to do that when he came back for Arsenal, but he was starting to do it again, I think, for Bournemouth on the weekend.
I feel like I've still heard a lot from him since his move to Bournemouth in terms of, you know, commenting on stuff. I just feel like, yeah, he's just like a bit like a Joey Barton.
Oh, he's evidently, like, he's evidently up, a bad twat, like, isn't he? Not being funny, but, you know, he's obviously a good footballer as well.
Bless him.
I think I'm hoping it's going to be a really good move for him because, as I said, I think we said a couple of weeks ago that I think he just needs a run of games to get that run of form and get that run of fitness. I'm hoping if he can get that together and he has a decent season at Bournemouth where he can stay fit, then he'll hopefully come back to Arsenal the player that we all hoped he would be. And I can see him, as I said, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, being the kind of long-term successor to what Cazorla is doing at Arsenal at the moment.
Well, I just hope, like, to bring it back to the two teams on show, I just hope that Bournemouth can kind of keep all of their players fit this season and can have a pretty good season and see what they can do. I think they could probably even have a tilt at the top half of the table.
I think they'll probably,
I don't think there's a top half finish.
Go on, Lance.
I think there's a lot of players who are a little bit... There's a few players who are suspect. You know, Jordan Ibe cost him 15 million quid. Came off again on Saturday. Don't think he's having the impact that he should be. I don't know. There's a number of players who you can't really name their first 11 a lot of the time. And I worry that if they do get an injury to someone like a Wilshere or Callum Wilson gets another injury, I don't really know where the side goes. But, you know, I'm hoping this out because I do really rate the way they've kind of put it together. But I do think that the reason Watford and Bournemouth went at each other on the weekend is because they both saw each other as the target teams. They've got to take points off to stay in this league. And that's because they both see themselves in that sort of B and C band of games. So,
but it is nice to see teams who, you know, if they are in that C band, like, their tactic is to go for each other and to try and win the game rather than just try and not lose it.
Very true.
So going from two C band teams to two definite A class teams, what a game this was between Spurs and Man City.
What a segue that was from Matt Pritchard.
Solid. It was like Richard O'Brien / Rich was back here. I'm impressed.
Are you listening, Richard Mead? This was a fantastic game. I think the 2-0 scoreline was fair, but also on another day, Aguero probably could have scored a hat trick, and if he was on his very best form, this could have easily been 2-2. I mean, there was a lot like that I enjoyed about this game. I loved the fact that Dier can't get in the team, not because he's not a good player, but you know, you don't have to play everyone just because they're a good player. If there's another player who, like Wanyama, who's doing that job better at the moment, that's what squad competition is for. And you know, Wayne Rooney has been dropped recently because he's not performing as well as other people in that position. You put Mata in there, and he's been playing well recently. And yeah, like, nothing against Dier. I absolutely love Eric Dier, but yeah, it's good to see Wanyama coming in, and he was a monster. He was in amongst it this weekend.
They do tend to, I think, the English mentality is we tend to lack a little bit of a ruthless streak. You know, we tend to sort of look at positions in teams, and when we talk about who's going to be transferred into a team, it's normally for a player that you're taking out, or you're trying to make, you're going, oh yeah, we won't take that player out, we'll add to the squad. And that's where the whole two players for each position comes from. But you're absolutely right. You know, the best managers have a completely ruthless side to them. And Pochettino has looked at that squad and has probably thought, look, Dier can't get through another season at the top level. With his temperament, you know, he did have a couple of like lapses in form last season. Did have a couple of sort of moments, you know, especially against Chelsea, where he really lost his head, and he's looked at it and gone, he's going to be a great player, but actually he needs some support. I need someone else to be able to play that position. And he knew Wanyama was in there and can do it. I think the interesting thing about Wanyama is, I made a comment at the start of the season, which was that I thought Spurs were worse with their transfer business than they were last season. And I'm obviously love to be wrong. I'm sure that's not the last time you'll hear that this season, but they really have stepped it up a notch. And Wanyama looks like he's turned up at Spurs and is just has really adapted to the place. He looks leaner. It looks like he's lost a lot of weight. Looks a lot more mobile in that position. And I think he obviously buys into Pochettino's philosophy. And you just feel like the whole club has gone from this sort of club that wanted to play brinksmanship on the final day of the transfer window to a club that was looking at a squad going, we know where we are. We need to add three or four absolute belters in exactly, you know, the positions we want to, and they're going to play in the shape we need. And that's really what the core of the best teams in Premiership are now. It's not about individuals. It is really about kind of a team ethic and a framework and how they play within it. So it's really interesting.
And buying players over a period of three or four transfer windows that fit like a model that you're going for, or in the case of teams like Southampton, and you know, we'll come on to Swansea in a bit, but they've been buying players and hiring managers to fit their system for 5 years, and that, I really think that's the way forward. I was one who said that I thought Spurs had a good transfer and they'd strengthened the right places. It's only 8 games in, we'll see, but all the signs are good at the moment. I thought their pressing in this game was nothing like I'd ever seen. It's very easy to see Pochettino like now executing really on his like Bielsa background. Bielsa's like crazy runs teams into the ground, so it'll be interesting to see what Spurs can do next year, I think. But the word that sprang to mind when I was watching the game was it wasn't, you know, just coherent pressing, and it wasn't even like aggressive pressing. It was like menacing. It was like, I felt like sort of almost nervous when Man City players were on the ball, because it's just like you knew that there was going to be a Spurs player charging at you with the intent to win it.
I'll tell you what did make me think watching this game was, this almost looked like exactly what Spurs tried to do to Chelsea last season. And it was just, they got so badly wrong against Chelsea and they went over the line far too often. Yeah. This game almost seemed like exactly what they were trying to do against Chelsea. They got it so badly wrong against Chelsea, whereas against City, they got it so perfectly right.
I mean, it's a really high-risk, high-reward strategy. But Alderweireld, in particular, I thought there were a few times when either Sterling or Aguero kind of finally got the ball, got past that midfield and got the ball, and then turned and was starting to run, you know, still a good 60, you know, 50, 60 yards from goal, just inside the Spurs half, because they were so high. And Alderweireld would just come absolutely bombing out and just like make a beeline straight for Aguero and smash into him and take the ball off him. And yeah, just aggressive, like I said, is the word that sprang to mind. I thought, like, yeah, I haven't really seen anything like that. There's a very classic clip of the Dutch total football team. And it's nothing like on the scale of this, but it's kind of as shocking, it's way more shocking, that there's the, I can't remember who it was in the 78 the 78 World Cup, I think, or the 70, whichever the 78 competition would have been, and someone's trying to run through their midfield, and it's just tackle after tackle after tackle from different players, like all charging at the ball, and it was like as striking to me as something like that.
Yeah, they do tend to gang up a bit. It's a bit like what Liverpool are doing with Klopp as well, but it's a really interesting one. I think it exposed something which I was really surprised about with City, is they, without De Bruyne there, and with the fullbacks he picked, they look like an old side. I mean, not old, obviously, but older, more experienced. If you work from the back, you've got Bravo. You've got Stones, who's a younger guy in central defence, and you've got Zabaleta, Kolarov and Otamendi, all kind of, you know, either over or pushing 30 in the midfield. You've got, you know, Fernandinho, who's, you know, late 20s. You've got up front, you've got Aguero as a seasoned professional, Navas out on the side. Sterling's a young player, but I felt like they lacked a bit of mobility. I felt like they do need a bit of an injection of youth in place in that team. And Sane brought that on. I thought when Sane came on, they suddenly looked more dynamic than when Navas was on, who wants to do one particular thing. And I think Tottenham did expose that side of the game. I think they would have been absolutely chuffed when they saw Zabaleta and Kolarov on both sides, because as good as their delivery is, you know, it's not great.
I was surprised they went with those two fullbacks again, because they played him versus Celtic. And again, he made them run again. Surely the point of having four good fullbacks, you can rotate them the same way Spurs do. Mm-hmm. I think Otamendi was very, very lucky to get away with not being sent off. At times, he looked like he was all over the place with the movement of Spurs' kind of top three or four players around him. He looked like he was really, really struggling with the movement, and especially kind of having to come out and deal with people not, you know, like in almost a false nine or ten position, having to come out and deal with them. He seemed to get away with a couple of fouls where you think, oh, you're on a yellow, you really shouldn't be making those sorts of challenges. But I was surprised. So this guy, Sane, I don't rate Jesus Navas, never have done. Don't really see what he brings to a team. For Sane, surely they paid a lot of money for him. I've not really seen that much of him in the first kind of seven or eight games. I know it took him two or three games to get into a squad. Do you think that's an issue, or do you think they're just kind of bedding him in slowly?
Yeah, I think it's number two. I think they're bedding him in slowly. I don't think there's any reason to... They've won five games on the bounce before this. I don't think there's any reason to rush to get him in the team. Like Pep, I was actually, while I was on holiday, I was reading a biography of his first season at Bayern Munich. Like, so it's not a dissimilar situation, first season at a new club. And it said, like, to get players to work the way he wants to work, he has such a, like, specific idea that kind of relies on very specific movements to be made, you know, coordinated and choreographed all at once, that if it doesn't happen, it can all fall apart. So maybe it's a bit like, you know, he's a young player who he hasn't worked with before, and he wants to, you know, there's, like I said, there's no reason to rush him in when you're winning every game. You can just keep him on the bench, get him slowly worked in. Like, talking about people being old, I thought in the post-match interview that Zabaleta came out for the interview, and I thought he looked older than both Pep and Pochettino, which probably isn't a good sign.
He looks like he had an uphill paper round. Let's put it that way. You know, he definitely has had a harder childhood than you'd probably expect.
I'll tell you one interesting fact I heard. I think it was yesterday or today. I was listening to another podcast, and Spurs haven't conceded a goal from open play this season yet.
Wow.
Yeah, Liverpool's was a penalty, I think. Yeah.
That's impressive. We talked a lot, though, about their pressing, but I thought that their attacking was equally good. I thought that is the best performance that I've ever seen by Dele Alli. Like, there were so many times when he's turning away from, let's face it, really, really good, experienced players, and, like, faked to go one way and turned, and they, you know, they're thrown off balance and stuff, which, you know, you don't really see that often against players of that calibre. And I thought he was absolutely sensational. Son, obviously, as well. He's really hit a rich vein of form at the moment. His assist was outstanding.
Dele Alli, he's had a rest. He didn't start the season, but he sort of came off the bench a few times. And I think that long season as a young player, and then the Euros, and then coming kind of back, I think he needed a bit of rest, and I think you're probably going to start to see the better of him, best of him now.
I think with Spurs, the trick's going to be how they're going to do in 20 games time.
Yeah.
How they're going to be doing, because, you know, I mean, actually, jokes aside, like, the injuries and things might actually help them, because, you know, Kane's kind of getting a rest, and Dier sat most of this game out. You know, Wanyama's obviously taken his place, and I think maybe that will actually work in their favour. I hope Pochettino doesn't fall into the trap of playing the same people every week. I think get Son in there while he's on his hot streak. If it lasts, like, keep him in. But I remember, you know, there was a few seasons ago, Manchester City were absolutely, like, dominating early on in the season, like, blitzing through everyone. And they just kept playing the same players, and particularly people like David Silva. And then it got to the end of the season, they were all just totally out on their feet, and they ended up losing the league because of it. So I hope they don't fall into the same trap.
I hope they do, and Liverpool take advantage.
Yeah, but, same here.
Yeah, you're just waiting for St. Tottenham's day, aren't you? Aren't you, Pritch? You'll hold out for
that. Comes around every year.
It's like Christmas. It's the
gift. Yeah,
well, I heard. I saw a tweet earlier which I thought was quite good, which is basically Man City are definitely going to win the league. And the logic behind it is that, Arsenal always finish above Spurs, so it's definitely not going to be Spurs. And then Arsenal never win the league, so it's not going to be them either. I was like, oh. Nice.
But I think a nice little segue into the team you're forgetting there, perhaps. Laney's Liverpool. On an away win to the to everyone's favourite 3 point team.
Should we start with how the game actually went and talk a bit about Swansea?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because I think Gwendolyn got sacked on his birthday as well. That's incredibly harsh. But I don't know. I know that Swansea's results hadn't been really good, but I think the way they've been playing is excellent. He's obviously imposed a slightly different system on them. I think they're pressing. Like we keep mentioning pressing, but they're pressing a lot higher. It's evident to see them chasing all over the pitch. And I think they've been playing some decent teams recently who are able to play their way out. There was a very good goal from Manchester City the other week where Swansea were basically pressing them back into their own box and City passed it all the way around them and within about 20 passes and 30 seconds had the ball in the back of the net. But I think that's a very harsh sacking for me. I think it looked like they were just a little bit away from clicking, and then once something clicks, maybe they could go on a run of, you know, 10 games and have a decent run.
Sorry, I've literally just thought about this. If you can't get sacked off on your birthday, when can you get sacked off?
Oh, my word.
Rich, back to the game. Back to the game.
Oh, my word.
Oh, dearie me. Anyway,
going ladies, back to Swansea. I think the interesting thing about them is that I don't think they had actually played like that in a lot of the other games. I think they'd actually tried to play much more their previous passing game. And I think this one, they kind of tried to rattle Liverpool early, which is probably a good tactic. And they caught Liverpool really, really cold. And Liverpool have played a system this season where the front group of players float a lot. And actually Swansea played on that because they didn't let us get the ball into that third of the pitch. And they pressed it everywhere else. And that was the plan, was to stop that supply. And you made everyone in the front drop deeper to try and get the ball. Dropping deeper obviously compresses the space and means that you sort of stifle the game a little bit. So it was really interesting to kind of see how they did it, but they couldn't keep it going.
To compare it to, it reminded me a little bit of how Liverpool were last season when Klopp came in and things were changing and they were moving in the right direction, but you know, the team wasn't perfect yet and it wasn't used to all going at the same moment and figuring out how to press perfectly and where you need to be on the pitch. But it looked like there were things that were working there and, you know, they weren't doing as well as Liverpool were at the same point last season. And, you know, Liverpool had a bit more time and Swansea can't really afford to get tied up in a relegation. But it was reminiscent of that.
It was actually, because when Leroy Fer comes off, when Leon Britton comes off, they are absolutely out on their feet. And if you notice, when Liverpool were like that when they first came, when they were just running, because that was what Klopp could get them to do through clarity of thought. He was like, start running more, we'll win games, we'll lose some, but at least you guys will start getting to the ball and pressing in the way I want you to. Now it's much more coordinated, but it's taken a year. And so you're absolutely right.
I wonder if whoever kind of gets that job, whether it's Steve Clarke or someone else full time, will benefit from the grueling early games that they've obviously been put through.
Do you mean Swansea? You know Bob Bradley's got that
Bob
job,
Bradley's
right?
Sorry, Swansea. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up. But yeah, whether he will benefit from them having been through obviously that routine where they're trying to get much fitter, and in about 6 or 7 games it will start to kick in.
I don't honestly think it will. Actually, I think Swansea potentially have sort of, there's a bit of a ceiling of a lot of the players there, and the ceiling is quite low. I don't think you look across the team and see really good players in their position. Leon Britton's now 34. I think Sigurdsson is the truly kind of top class player they've got. Fabianski looks good in goal, I have to say. But you've lost Williams. The centre of the midfield looks a bit lightweight. And once Liverpool did kind of get on top, they didn't have an answer. They didn't have a plan B. And generally, good players do have a plan B. And I think that they are. I would genuinely worry for them in terms of staying up. Bob Bradley's come from Le Havre. He's not as if he's come from a top job. So it'll be interesting to see what impact he can make with them.
Yeah, I've said this. I've been saying this for the majority of the season. I think they had an awful transfer window. And I can agree with you there, Lins. I think Sigurdsson and a push Fabianski would be the only two players you could pick out of that team and put in a team in the top 10 or 12 teams, maybe, if not more. There's nobody else in that squad.
Jefferson Montero.
Nah.
Hot and cold,
mate.
That's all pace, no end product.
He's rocks or diamonds, mate. He's nothing in between.
South American Aaron Lennon, he is.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
You like that?
Yeah, I'll take that. That is absolutely lovely.
Right, you can have that one for free.
What do we think? Is anyone else a little bit disappointed that England finally finds somebody who can take a penalty? He's just retired from international football.
It's James the Rock Milner. Yeah, no, he's... Milner's kind of a... He's an interesting case in point around getting footballers to play at left back. And he's really started... I mean, it's just James Milner is a very good footballer, very intelligent footballer. He might be a bit boring, but he is a really good footballer. And he's just learned that position in five or six games. And he just looks like he's played there his entire career now. And he really is making a massive fist of it.
He's like a poor man's Ashley Young in that respect.
Yeah, I think he'll struggle against some of the bigger teams. Poor man's Ashley Young. Really
I thought I'd got Sorry, through.
I was on the flow. I had like a point and stuff, but I've kind of forgotten that. I think he might struggle against some of the best tactical managers that have got more wherewithal and have intelligent sort of fullbacks to counter him, because he always wants to go on the inside. But Swansea's kept showing him the inside and trying to close off the line. I was like, you want him going down the line. He's playing. You want him on his left foot. You don't want him coming inside, because when he gets inside, then he can deliver or he can drive into the box, which is... And, you know, he actually created a chance after we'd scored the penalty, where we almost scored a sort of a third, or maybe it was before the penalty, I can't remember. But, I mean, Liverpool, you know, we've talked about it a few times, and I'm very, very happy the way Liverpool are playing. And, you know, it's even better now, because there's a few players that aren't going on into the international break, namely the goalkeeper. Pretty much the entire defence doesn't go on international duty now, because Klein's pulled out of the England squad, which I think is good, because the whole set piece thing is creeping back in. And although I'm really positive about the way we're playing, there are some things we definitely need to improve. The new keeper looks nervy, to say the least. So I think we've got to spend some time, kind of getting a few of those fundamentals right. But, you know, up front and attacking wise, Sturridge has to play against these sides that want to play deep against us. The Firmino, Mane, Coutinho front line is definitely better against better teams. But the Sturridge does help to give a focal point and to sort of push teams a bit deeper, especially when they want to play deep. So, all is rosy, let's put it that way. And the next game is 17th of October, Monday night, against United at Anfield. So a game that the Libero team are going to watch in a pub somewhere, I believe.
Yeah, we should try and get to a pub to watch that game. Just one final point on Liverpool. I love watching them these days, obviously, because they're a Jurgen Klopp team. But I really like it when you have players who are equally good playing as kind of like a straight winger or like second striker, and who can also do, you know, a decent job in central midfield. There's not that many people who are capable of doing both well, but I think Coutinho and Alana are actually very good at both of those positions. And yeah, it's that rotation that you're talking about. You need players who are good enough in multiple positions to be able to do that.
I think there's a really interesting thing if you look at Klopp's, the footballers Klopp has produced, especially in midfield, that he produces really good footballers and needs to... they don't necessarily have a defined position. They just are really good footballers. Marco Reus, Gundogan. They don't necessarily have a defined position. They can play forward, they can play back. They're just very good on the ball, and that's the philosophy he has. So it's really interesting.
Cool. I think that's a good place to put a pin in it and call it a half-time. We're going to pop back and get Chris from the Aztec Zone, as we're going to need his help in the Futuristic Zone, as he's got the cool and funky haircut amongst us. So we'll take a bit of a break and then come back and see you guys in a little while.
For any Chelsea fans watching this, would you like to give them a message, what they can expect from Victor Moses?
Yeah, definitely. They're still there's still more to come for me. As I said, I keep working hard week in, week out, and there's still more to come, and hopefully I'll do my best, give 100% for the club, for my players as well, whenever I'm on the pitch, and then hopefully we'll win. There's more trophies to come to win. I'm just happy I'm here at the end of the day, and I grew up here, and being here is like, I feel like I'm back home now.
And welcome back. Hopefully that wasn't too long and it lived for you, and it was a little bit worth it. We're going to jump straight into maybe one of the more beige games of the weekend, but has a bit of an influence at the top of the table. So Burnley 0 and the mighty, mighty Gunners battered our friends in the Northwest 1-0. In all honesty, this is an absolute shower of shit to watch. I kind of struggled through this whilst trying to catch up with the Ryder Cup on my phone as well at the same time. And it was, it was terrible. I mean, Burnley set up exactly what they wanted to do. Any team coming up from the Championship hosting a team who finished second in the league last year is going to set up exactly the same way. They're going to try and frustrate. They're going to try and aim for a draw, maybe nick a win, and that's exactly what they did. They had a couple of chances, and there were periods during the second half where I think we were actually really under pressure, and they actually really got at Monreal, especially. They really got us down the flanks and put in some crosses for Boyd and for Sam Vokes. And there were times like in that game, especially towards the middle end of the second half, where I thought we were actually going to slip away and lose that game.
It's the type of game that you would definitely have dropped points at in seasons gone by. So we'll see if it means anything this season. But yeah, thinking of going up north after a good couple of games and then you know, losing it against the lower half of the table team.
Yeah, I quite admired Arsenal for sticking to the style of play. My dad's an Arsenal fan, and so is my brother, and they've always repeatedly gone on about how Wenger just chucks strikers on. He just throws strikers on. He just throws them on, completely compromises the shape of the team. And often has not necessarily got the kind of results over the last few seasons. But it was really interesting. They stuck to the style of play. They took off Iwobi. They brought on Oxlade-Chamberlain. They tried to keep pace down the sides of Burnley to try and keep pushing them back and work the ball. And I think it was interesting to kind of say that they did really have something. Again, I criticised them for not having had a style of play. And it was a 1-0. It was scruffy, but they stuck at it, and they did keep going. And you're absolutely right. They would have potentially lost that game. I mean, Liverpool lost it of the season, and going slightly on to Burnley as well. I genuinely believe they might be the only team in the Premiership that can actually defend, because they are really well drilled, and I can't think of anyone else who defends as well. And probably Spurs with our little non-open play goal stats, but Burnley are really well drilled, and for a lot of time they made Arsenal
defending
look quite
deep.
Ordinary.
I think is. But defending deep. Yeah.
There's defending deep, and then there's being organised. You know, Sunderland defend deep, but they're crap. So it is doing both things really, really well. And I think there's an art to it. You know, there's more than one way to win a football game, right? Or to get a point. And Burnley, you know, I quite admire them. I've got Heaton in my fantasy football team, and he's not going anywhere. So
yeah, I've got Heaton in my fantasy football team as well.
This is where I'm going wrong with the same team as you.
So I watched this game, obviously, and there were points in that second half where we could have passed that ball forever and we wouldn't have got through there. I mean, admittedly, we went into kind of shit Arsenal mode and we're passing the ball really slowly side to side. And you're never going to break a team like Burnley down if you just pass them. If it takes you four passes to get it from one wing to the other, you're never going to break them down. All they're going to do is shift as a pack across the pitch. And they were really, really well drilled, and it took a kind of freak late goal from Koscielny, which I think we can all agree probably shouldn't have been given for numerous reasons, but it took quite a freak goal for us to win that game. So
I think it was a perfectly legit goal.
I did as well. I didn't think the handball was anything. I think it was ball to hand. He made an attempt for the ball. He didn't handle it over the line. It was going over whatever happened.
I think, the talking about the Burnley defence, I really like the two English boys at centre back. Like, it's good to see, actually, because I think they're both reasonably young. I think they're both early to mid 20s, Michael Keane and Ben Mee. And I think Michael Keane in particular, him and his brother hadn't been able to force their way in at Man United. And I think he potentially could end up like another Shawcross, like not not absolute top quality, but definitely, definitely good Premier League quality, and probably banging on the door for the a spot in the England team in the not too distant future.
Belmore, this is good insight, and obviously something you haven't seen. He's been called into the England squad today to replace Glenn Johnson. Oh. Michael Keane's in there, so there you go.
Why was Glenn Johnson in there in the first place? Is the bigger question.
I think they must have realised that and just hacked him down the first training session to get him off.
Sackable offence. I think Glenn Johnson probably pulled out going, I think you've made a mistake here. I wasn't expecting this that much.
But if you look around, like, I don't know, I'm just going to say this off the top of my head, it might not be right, but I can kind of, there's a few England defenders who are kind of okay and pushing 30 or slightly over 30, like your Cahills and your Jagielkas. And then you've got a lot of youngsters coming through, like Stones, who is, 21? But people who are like 24, 25, I'm struggling to think of that many defenders who look like they are capable of making that step up. And yeah, I mean, it's only a few games, but I think he's, I really like the look of him.
I think if Burnley go down, he won't go down with them.
I'd agree with
I can imagine there'll be clubs who'll want him.
Yeah. So speaking of Glenn Johnson, moving on to another one of his legendary appearances in clubs he signed for, going on to Chelsea. What do we think? Away to Hull. Obviously, Hull started the season on a fire, and they're kind of going back down to where we all thought they would be now. I think this is fairly consecutive losses for them now. What do we think about the away game to Chelsea? The Chelsea away performance.
It's been about 4 weeks since I've heard the phrase "What the fuck is going on at Hull," which means that we've regressed. I think would be the analytics way of saying it. But yeah, they're doing what everyone assumed they would do at the start of the season. Costa was amazing in this game. He was an absolute beast. When he plays like that, I don't think there's a more kind of I don't want to say a more complete striker, but a more like thorough striker in the way that he can do everything. So like he is big, he's good in the air, he's strong, he's also deceptively quick. His timing on his runs is excellent, and he hits the target from anywhere with any part of his body. And you don't get this type of level of performance where everything's clicking that much. But when you do, I think you're really struggling to find a better striker on the planet.
That is bold. That is a bold, bold shout.
Yeah. I think he's a really good player. He's a really good finisher. I think when he's on his day, I think he's a really good player. I don't think he's that complete. He's definitely improved his temperament this season. I think I'm interested to sort of see the players around him. I think Hazard's regressed back to sort of last season Hazard to a certain extent. He looks like he's a little bit uninterested again, which is interesting. Willian looks like he's gone back to last season, which is pretty bloody reliable. And I have to say, I think Chelsea they've still got issues. I think Hull are genuinely going to now slide down the league as we predicted at the start of the season. So it's good to know some of our predictions will come true. But I do think Chelsea are in a little bit of trouble. It doesn't feel like Conte's had a revolution, even though he did, play some players, and Shalabar finally made his debut and all that good stuff. Yeah. It doesn't feel like he's revolutionised that side as much as he probably needs to get them sort of hungry and really attacking games again. At least
very early days, though, again. Let's give the man a bit of time.
I agree, but he won't get time, will he? He's not at the right club to get time. And, if you want time, go and get another job. This is win or bust. Yeah, so he'll be out by Christmas if he's not winning. I'm prepared to be wrong, but the signs don't look good, especially in
The odd thing for me is that for a team that isn't playing in any other tournaments, they don't look like, he's having a week between games most of the time to drill his players on the training ground. It's not like they're going away to Champions League games, Europa League games. He's having a week between every game to drill his teams.
Yeah.
And if he does want to introduce this back three, he's having like 6 days to do it between games, 7 days to do it between games. And they don't seem to be kind of picking up on this as quickly as I thought they might do.
I think he's...
No, that back three to me, that's the point I was just going to make, actually. I think they look like a back two. There's three of them in the space where I'd normally expect to see two defenders, and they all play very central, and with a back three, I think quite a lot of the time fullbacks are very high up the pitch, and the job of the outside halves is to move across and to get the ball, but they weren't doing that, and so there are quite a lot of times where Hull were able to get behind the Chelsea fullbacks, and then they were kind of crossing it in, and there were three big lads waiting there challenging the Hull strikers. But against a better team, you get punished for playing that way, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I think in many ways, Hull might feel like a little hard done by, probably a bit like Burnley as well. I think even though they got pummeled by Chelsea, it took two fantastic goals to actually get through them. Williams in particular was absolutely sensational. I think that might be up there with the shout for goal of the season, the way he just feathered it into the top right-hand corner.
Williams definitely got that in his locker then. I think, as you said, Lanes, he started the season a little bit slowly. I've had him in a fantasy team since the start of the season, and this week was the last week I was going to give him, and he finally scored. But he looks like he is kind of getting back to that form there, where he's the undroppable player of those three behind the striker.
Yeah, I think that is the one. You know, Hazard's, whether Hazard was playing for a move towards the end of the transfer window, I'm not sure, but he definitely started the season in a much richer vein of form. But maybe I'm being harsh, but he seems to have dropped off a little bit now. That the work ethic doesn't seem to be there as much still at the start of the season. So we'll see. I mean, again, you know, Belmer is right. It is early days, but as I say, you don't get a lot of time at Chelsea. And I am glad to see that he has pulled out people like Ivanovic, because, you know, Ivanovic is dragging them down in defence. And I think he does need to do more of that. He does need to sort of slowly remove the old guard and kind of get a bit more energy into that side. Because you're right, they don't look very energetic for a team that's only spending, you know, isn't spending six days on the training field in between games. So it's just be interesting. You know, I'm hoping they stay where they are, but be interesting to see if they can kind of go on a run.
And you mentioned work ethic there. I think that's probably the difference between like Willian and Hazard. Yeah. Is that when Willian's not having a good game going forward, you know you're getting a performance out of him defensively, and he's covering his positions, and he's working hard, and he's making space for other people and helping the team. Whereas with Hazard, when he's not playing well, it's actually a bit of a burden, perhaps, sometimes.
He could be anywhere, yeah.
So, I think there were a lot of pretty terrible games run this weekend towards the kind of the middle lower half of the table. But I think there's one more game I just wanted to touch on. That was the United Stoke game. This was an interesting game.
We paid this as a really big Man United win.
I think everyone did.
Although I said it might be 3-3, I think.
I think everyone apart from Lee Grant would have thought it was a big United win. Derby legend Lee Grant.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, didn't you guys sell him on transfer window day?
Yeah, he was.
He's on loan, isn't he? Because they lost Butland to injury before the transfer window closed. They had Che Gibbon, who massively limited as a goalkeeper, and then they brought him in as the kind of the cover, and they realised Che Gibbon's actually shite, and they've actually gone straight to Lee Grant, which is kind of an interesting turn of events. This, I think, may not get an early goal here. If Ibra puts his chance away, which he puts wide of the post. That they're home and hosed, they'll be away to the races. So it's his Stoke's confidence. But I think Man United have also got very frail confidence at the moment. I think they're still trying to find their way under Mourinho. They have dropped Wayne Rooney, which means there's a presence missing on the pitch. And I think it's a really interesting one. I think it's fascinating to see how they develop under Mourinho, and whether Mourinho can really inspire that change in the way they sort of go onto the pitch and kind of improve their confidence.
I wouldn't rule him out. He's done it before. He's got a bit of a history, but we'll see.
He is a bit good.
I think the other game I wanted to just mention quickly was West Ham Middlesbrough. West Ham starting with sort of Antonio up top, with Kouyaté almost playing along upside him, which is one of the strangest decisions I've ever seen. It was absolutely crap. And their build-ups, I've watched a bit of the game and had to turn it off, but their build-ups were so stunted, where they would get the ball forward and there was no one in support because there's no strikers on the pitch and they had to cut back or go square. And I think Borough haven't got the most amazing defence, but they just didn't have anyone to play against. And I think West Ham had 19 shots, but only two on target. Payet obviously scored that amazing dribble and a really good finish, but 19 attempts and two on target just shows what the quality of West Ham's attacking positioning was like.
I think what is interesting with Borough's defence, because Borough's defence is what they built their challenge in the Championship last season. They were stingy as anything. They'd win a lot of games 1-0. Karanka had them really well drilled. So it's interesting. The West Ham thing is a bit bizarre, really, isn't it? As I say, I think I said last week, I think they're still playing the occasion whenever they play in that stadium. It takes a quiet wonder goal to kind of get through get through, you know, the Middlesbrough defence, and they fit, they appear to have sort of bought Zaza, and then, as you say, want to play Kiarte and Antonio up front, which is just weird. Like, it doesn't strike me as, it strikes me as a bit of a desperate move. It's a bit of a sort of a grab, isn't it, for trying to find some form from anywhere and putting two players who are generally good. Or maybe it was a move to get Kiarte out of central midfield, where he's been awful all season. But yeah, I don't get it at the moment. And you know, they need to get on top of it pretty soon. You just wonder how long kind of Bilic lasts. I saw Karen Brady actually tonight in King's Cross. Should have asked her.
Well, that's a lovely end to our Premiership coverage. So we have a little dalliance with our lower league liberos.
Yeah, this is the bit that everyone's been waiting for, isn't it?
This is the main part of the show. We just keep it 40 minutes in, just to get everyone listening. Should we start on the South Coast, Lanes?
We should. It's a disaster, Pritch. It's an absolute disaster. After
it's
hailing,
such a roller coaster, just watching your face every week.
After hailing them as a team of a generation last week, and the start of the glorious run back to the big time, a second straight defeat for the mighty Pompey, going down 2-1 at home to Doncaster Rovers. It was interesting because I talked last week about the intensity, and I'm kind of getting into this. I've started reading, like, you know, their Twitter feed and stuff like that to find out what the manager's saying. And Lahim last week was lamenting the lack of their intensity and kind of the pressure that, you know, they could maintain it at home in front of the crowd, and that was carrying them through games, and away from home they were really struggling. But I've watched the highlights now because I've kind of been on their website, which is, this is all getting a bit much. And they start so slowly. They start the game so slowly. And Doncaster are around the same position in the table. They both were on 17 points before the game started. So, right, it's a kind of a battle at the top of the table, although it is the maddest league in the world, TM. You know, so they go out pretty slowly. Even at home, the crowd sort of feels a bit dipped. It doesn't feel like they've got as many people in the house. And they go 2 goals down within 30 minutes. And it took them to going 2-0 down to kind of get that intensity back, almost like the crowd kind of turned up expecting them to win because they've been playing so well at home. And they didn't really start playing until 40 minutes in. They get a goal. They sort of start playing around 35 minutes. They get a goal 6 minutes later. They're clearly the better side. And I think half-time comes at a bad time for them, basically. They kind of go in. You can tell that they're Donny regroup and just try and sort of stifle the game, defend pretty deep. And Pompey, again, kind of come out the traps pretty slow. But again, they're still right in there. They made a fist of it. Donny are up to second, leapfrogged them. But Pompey, as I say, stay sixth in what I'm now titling the maddest league in the world, where everyone's got pretty much the same points and is playing someone that's only 2 points below them, even though they're 15 places below them at the moment. So it was an interesting weekend, but I'm worried I might have put the curse on them by calling them basically the best team I've ever seen.
Should we take a trip over to the East, maybe Essex, Bells,
yeah,
Colchester United?
Not much better for Colchester United. I said last week that they had a tough run of games coming, and so it's proved. Lost 2-0 against Carlisle. In truth, they were second best through the entire game. I watched the highlights. I watched the extended highlights. I'm actually thinking of getting paying £4.49 for the pass so I can get all of their content. Carlisle had loads of chances before going ahead. Sammy Smodic also had two wicked chances, one which was headed at the keeper, and then I think he had a one-on-one with the keeper which he kind of scooped over the bar, but they didn't really deserve to win. So they really, really got to beat Newport this weekend. Newport's game was actually cancelled this weekend because of a waterlogged pitch, but hopefully they can beat them next weekend because, yeah, they've got some really tough games coming up, as I mentioned last week.
They'll beat Newport. Everyone beats Newport.
Yeah, well, I hope so. They're bottom of the table, so hopefully. And then the only other real bit of news this week is George Ellacobi, who you may remember playing for Wolves and also played for Forest, notably. Played, I think, maybe 17 times last season, something like that, but hasn't played at all this season, like not in favour with the new management team. And he's been loaned to the almighty Braintree.
These are big moves that are happening here, aren't they? Although Ellacobi seeming like to stay in the same area, kind of Midlands with Wolves and Forest. Now he's moved to Essex. He kind of wants to stay in that area, you know, so he's gone to Braintree to kind of stay in the same area. It's nice to see someone, you know, putting down roots and really staying in the same area.
He's probably got a gym membership that he didn't want to come to. That is hench.
Again, we talk about admin. You know, the admin is important. You can't rate it highly enough.
So after those dalliances with your underperforming teams, let's go to the real Wimbledon. The real Wimbledon had an absolute rip-snorting 2-0 home win to Gillingham. While they didn't score any goals, actually, the majority of the play actually kind of resided around one player, and that was Gillingham's Rory Donnelly. He didn't start the game. Came on after, I think he came on for like 10 minutes in or 15 minutes in for Bradley Tack, who's one of Gillingham's better players. And in the kind of 85 minutes he's played, he's managed to give away the first goal by giving a loose back pass, which... I can't remember the guy's name. I think it's Polian or something like that. It's just rounded the keeper and tapped it in. So he's kind of set up his keeper there. Later on,
he's a striker, isn't he? What the hell is he back past? Didn't he used to be at Swansea?
He was at Swansea, yeah. He's then managed to curl a free kick around the wall just after the hour. But then, not before the end of the game, he's managed to get himself sent off for giving an abusive gesture towards home fans. So he's had the all round performance.
It's been a busy game, isn't he? Like
it's a really busy game.
What we call the Woodgate, the solid game that involves a goal, you know, a card of some kind. And
wow, yeah. I'm just looking at his Twitter, and he's got his latest tweet is: "I want to apologise for my performance in today's game and the actions that followed, leading to my dismissal from the pitch. I let my emotions and passion for Gillingham FC get the best of me, and it was an inexcusable spur of the moment reaction, which I deeply regret. I want to apologise to my teammates, the club, management staff and fans who I've let down." Woof. That is the full grovel right there.
Can't say fairer. You know, good, solid Twitter stalking as well there, Belmar. I'm impressed.
I just wanted to check that he was the Swansea guy. I remember from... that's just pure FIFA and champ knowledge talking there, but yeah.
But this was, going back to the game, this is a massive result for Wimbledon. We were languishing in the relegation zone with 10 points, with Gillingham 5 points above us. We now have 13 with the heady heights of 15th in the league, a mere 2 points behind the fake Wimbledon.
Excellent. It's always good to get that measure, the real versus the fake.
Yes, yes. So I know Rich will be back next week to give his coverage of the fake Wimbledon. But I know there's something, I think there's one thing you wanted to pick up on, Bell's interesting article you read about. Is it Ollie Burke?
Yeah. Just a little bit of an update about a few articles I've been reading this week. So first bit of news was that Moses made his first start in the league for Chelsea after joining them 4 years ago, and we talked about the now legendary hashtag Chelsea level admin. But I just wanted to give you a list of players. So Demba Ba, Schürrle, Van Hinkel, Schwarzer, Eto'o, Salah, Philip Luiz. Those are all players who have been bought, played in the Premier League and left Chelsea in the time it's taken Victor Moses to make his first appearance.
That list is so short.
Well, this is players who've actually played in the league. Obviously, they've got millions of people out on loan. And the other one, which is a good one, is David Luiz, who has been sold and brought back to the club in the time that Moses has made his first appearance.
That is a cracker. I love that.
That's a hell of a seven-a-side team. You've got Schwarzer in goal. You've got Philip Luiz and David Luiz at the back. Then you've got, Salah, Van Hinkel and Schürrle behind Demba Ba. That's a monstrous team.
I mean, surely you're not even bothering any of that. Surely you're just going for Schwarzer in goal, going straight to Eto'o, Salah, David Lolls and Demba Ba. Just going straight up attackers. David Lolls is going to be giving you everything you need. Bit of defending, bit of up front. Solid team there.
But the article that I wanted to mention as well was about Oliver Burke, and it was in The Guardian. It's worth having a read of, because he's talking about why he went to Red Bull Leipzig. And he had offers from Chelsea and people like that too, but and Tottenham, I think, or maybe Man United and Tottenham, but he opted to go there. And the quote is quite telling and sort of hints at Moses. "You can only look at your Chelsea and see the amount of talent they have, but they're all out on loan and not getting used. you don't feel wanted by a club when you sign for them for however much, and all of a sudden you're there for two training sessions and they've just bought someone for double the amount. You're thinking, why would they play me when they've just bought this guy that plays in my position, is more experienced and has a profile? For me, it was a no-brainer, really. And also, apparently, Red Bull Leipzig, Ralf Hasenhüttl, who's the manager, and the sporting director, Ralf Rangnick, who's been linked with the England job, went over to see him, and I think they must have had a private plane, because on the plane on the way back, they gave him a presentation about their vision for the club and how he fits in. And he said it was just miles ahead of what anyone else who had been linked to them was willing to do. He said there wasn't enough depth from other clubs in terms of how much they wanted me and whether I was going to play or not. So yeah, it's good to see like a good, you know, young player like really taking things into his own hands and like really trying to push his career in the right direction and not just taking the move that we've seen so many other players make. And yeah, it seems to be working out for him well, and I hope it continues. Worth a read.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think that's a, I mean, the sort of the final point on that, I think, is it's true that the Moses thing's perfect, isn't it? You know, he goes there as a proper talent from Palace, and you know, has done, could go a long way, and then just doesn't play. And you've seen it so many times where either, you know, a little bit of thought from the footballer, or a little bit of guidance from the agent, you know, for some young players in terms of the moves they make, could really help one, to improve certain players' careers, but also to improve the depth of talent across the league. You know, in terms of us having a more competitive league, it helps when players do make decisions like that. You know, I always think whenever this happens, I always go back to Scott Sinclair, who had that season at Swansea and then suddenly went to Man City, and you know, really can't have looked at actually how that was going to work out for him. He was bought of a drive, as part of a drive to kind of improve Man City's homegrown quota. That was the only reason he was bought there. He was never.
I think you can chuck Scott Parker and who was the other one that went to Chelsea as well? Oh, come on, brain. Ginger lad who ended up at Crystal Palace.
Steve Sidwell. Yeah, like, I mean, again, there's probably a list. I mean, do you know what? I'm being unfair to Man City and Chelsea. I think Liverpool have probably done it as well, you know, in terms of buying players and going, well, we can, so we will. You know, it suits our own kind of purpose. And I think if more players could have that attitude of Ollie Burke, then I think we will see teams that aren't traditionally able to stockpile players with better quality players. The money in the Premier League helps. You know, it does really help to kind of get them to, you know, to divide the money up in the league. Teams can hold on to these players, which increases the quality across the league. So it's a good article.
Yeah, definitely. Have a read of it. It's on The Guardian, and I'm sure if you just look for the latest football stuff or look for Oliver Burke Guardian.
Somebody do some admin and tweet it from our account. This is what social media is for.
We'll pop it out.
You two are the marketing managers.
I'll do some admin. Excellent.
Okay, well, I think that's probably a good place to put a pin in it. Thank you very much for listening. Hopefully next week we'll be back to a fantastic foursome again. I know we've been a threesome and a twosome for a few weeks now, so hopefully we'll welcome Rich back next week. But thanks very much for listening. As always, give us a shout on Twitter or Facebook if you've got any questions or comments. Say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye, guys.
Goodbye, guys.